Good morning. Before we start, I got a question for you guys, and I hope some of you have an answer. Maybe just a few. I'll pick one or two. This is a test. Not working? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, okay, then we'll forget about this thing if it doesn't work. There's too many things hanging on my ears anyway. You hook glasses over there, and then you put on hearing aids, and now I've got this microphone hanging from there. But these poor ears, it's a good thing they're big. Anyway, I want to know how many of you know what your name means. Put up your hand if you do. I'm going to pick two. Yes, young lady.
Pure.
Beg your pardon?
Pure.
And your name is?
Karen
means pure. Okay. Anybody else? Let's have another hand here. I need somebody else. Come on, quick. Get them up. Yes.
Warrior.
And your first name?
Elda.
Elda means warrior. poor Ed. But okay. We don't put much stock in the meanings of names. Mine means resolute protector, but I've hurt as many people as I've protected, probably more during the course of life. But we're going to look at a guy today who got saddled with a name. And we're going to talk about some of the names we get saddled with too. But first of all, we're going to Hebrews to read this guy's name. Doesn't say much about him in Hebrews. But he's listed as one of the people of faith, the champions of faith. It says, by faith Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. That's all it says about him in Hebrews. Not very much, eh? But to get to this place, he spent a long and difficult time. And we're going to start back in Genesis at his birth, and we're going to read everything that was ever said about Jacob. No, we're not going to do that. That would take way too long. We're probably going to take too long anyway. But we're going to start in Genesis chapter 25 with his birth. Seems like his parents had trouble conceiving, which happens to people, but these people didn't have some of the advantages we have. No fertility drugs, no magic surgeries, none of that stuff. Isaac, his father, his only resort was to prayer. He says, Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. It's not always that easy for everybody, but in this case, it happened. The children struggled together with her. Oh, twins. That must have been a solid prayer. And she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within you shall be divided. One shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger. Now, in that culture, that was unusual because the oldest in a family had special rights and privileges. I'm the oldest in my family, but there was no privileges. I got to go out and learn to milk cows first. That was the privilege. Then my sister, who was a year younger than me, came a year later. But actually, she was eager to start, so she didn't wait a year. Because anything I had, she wanted too. That's how it works with siblings, right? Anyway, when her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body, like a hairy cloak. So they called his name Esau. We'd have called him Red. That's what it means. Your name was given to you then. It had some meaning. If there was something special about you, that was your name. Today, instead of Darcy Brown, we'd have called him Black Brown, right? Because he's covered with hair, and he can grow a beard pretty fast anyway. But we call him Darcy instead. Is he here? There he is. Yes, yeah, okay. Yes, he is covered with hair. But anyhow, Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Jacob. Sounds like a good name. We name our kids Jacob, some of us, at times. Guess what it means? You don't have to guess, some of you. You already know because you've read this. It means cheater, fraud, he who grasps the heel. That meant cheater in those days, in this place. Imagine you're going to school and you're 7 years old and you cheat at a game and everybody calls cheater, cheater, pumpkin eater, blah, blah, blah. You can remember those days. He didn't have to start school. He was born. If somebody called Jacob, they said that what they were saying, when they said, Jacob, they said, cheater, come on over here. That's what it meant. And like I said, we get saddled with some names, but he bore it right from birth. And sometimes there's things about us that we attempt, and people's impressions of us, we attempt to live up to them, don't we? Or down, as the case may be. I'm sure that you've all had some experience with that. I know I certainly have. And Jacob began to live up to his name. He had no problem doing that. He started with there was something against him besides his name, too. It says in verse 28 of Genesis chapter 25, it says, Isaac loved Esau. Esau was a hunter. He brought home yummy venison and stuff like that. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. What a way to start a kid off. You name him cheater, and then each of you plays favorites, right? This is a recipe on how not to raise your kids. And it also says Isaac was 60 years old when he was born. Just imagine being raised by a 60-year-old man. Imagine being raised by somebody who's 67 years old and is sick and tired of little kids and can stand about 2 hours of noise and then has to get away from them. My grandchildren live with that. When I was 20 and 25 and raising children, I didn't even hear them. I know they made lots of noise. Now my grandchildren will play me out in about 2 hours or less. We go for long walks so that, and I turn off my hearing aids. It helps. Maybe it does help to be old and raise kids. Anyway, these boys are set against one another by their parents. Esau gets the, hey, Red, how you doing, buddy? And Jacob gets, hey, cheater, come on over here. I got something for you. So anyway, it says, once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. So this is Jacob. This is the first example of him trying to live up to his name or comfortably settling into it. I'm not sure which. And Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of that red stew, for I'm exhausted. Therefore, his name is called Edom, which has got something to do with red too. Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Remember, Esau is the oldest. Special privileges. Esau said, I'm about to die, and what use is a birthright to me? You can hear the sarcasm dripping from his voice. But Jacob, he sounds serious. This is a serious thing. And Jacob said, swear to me now. So Esau swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. I'm sure Esau never made much of it right at the moment. But he should have, because it was important. And then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose up and went his way. And thus Esau despised his birthright. Probably never thought much about it at the time. He was just hungry, right? But, hey, the cheater got him. Now, the birthright, the special privileges are Jacob's, he thinks. Now we'll flip over to chapter 27 for the second example of Jacob and trying to revel in his name a little or get the benefit from it. There was also a special blessing at this time in this society, which a father conferred on his oldest son, his privileged son, just before his death. Now, nobody really knows when that is, but anyway, it says Isaac was old, his eyes were dim, he was blind already, so that he could not see. He called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I'm old. I don't know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, go to the field and hunt game for me. Prepare for me some delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat and that my soul may bless you before I die." He lives a long time yet, but he's ready to give away the blessing. Oh, and here's mom, meddling mom. Any of you mothers ever meddle in your kids' affairs? Yeah, of course you do. Dads do it too. And some meddling is good. But it says, Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son," she's speaking to Jacob, "obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two goats that I may prepare them delicious food for your father, such as he loves, and you shall bring it to your father and eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." Now Jacob protests a little bit, and they fuss around a little, but he does it. And he's a little worried because Esau's all hairy, remember? So Rebekah binds him up with the goat skin, and he passes. Isaac loves the food. He blesses Jacob. It says, so he came near and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, smell the smell. I kind of like that. You know, my dad used to smoke a pipe when I was a little kid, and I never smoked myself. Well, I tried it once, but it was disgusting. But he smoked amphora pipe tobacco. It's a Dutch pipe tobacco soaked in wine. And even today, if I smell somebody smoking outside, not in a house, I can't stand it indoors, but outside, if I smell somebody smoking a pipe or a cigar especially, I could follow them around all day, especially in the fall. It's just the smell. And I guess that's what got Isaac. He smelled Esau's clothes on Jacob. This is his son, the hunter. "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven, the fatness of the earth, plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you." That was the blessing he intended for Esau. But who gets it? Jacob. And so then Esau comes back and finds out what's going on, and you'll have to read the story for yourself. It's a great story. It's a fantastic story. But anyway, it says, now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching." Means he's going to die. "And when he's dead, I'll kill my brother." But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said, "Behold, your brother comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away." So Jacob is off to visit his uncle Laban, way off in the country of Haran. And being as how things go when you're young, he meets some strange women. He meets, well, his cousin Rachel. And he kind of falls for her. and he's working for Uncle Laban. And Laban said to Jacob, "Because you're my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" They had funny ideas about what you could ask for wages in these days. But he says, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak. That's what it says in this translation. But some of the other translations say that she had soft eyes. So I prefer to think that even though she might have been a little on the plain side, she had beautiful eyes. And she's my favorite of the two. Anyway, it says Rachel's eyes were soft, beautiful eyes. But Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. She'd just glide into the room and everybody's head would turn, you know the drill. And Jacob loved Rachel and he said, "I'll serve you for 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." So that they made a deal, went along just fine. 7 years was up. We get to the wedding. It says he served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. You thought the Bible was just all doom and gloom. It's pretty mushy, too, in places. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. The Buddhists kind of believe in something called karma. And we call it, what goes around comes around. And that's how we said it when I was a kid. And that's kind of what's happening here. You know, the cheater is, the cheater's getting walked over a bit here. He's got a wife. They didn't have electric lights in those days. That's why they could pull us off. You know, couldn't just flip the switch and see who you were married to. Once the sun went down, the tent was dark, and that was it. In the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you've done to me?" I'd say more than that if it had happened to me. But did I not serve you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me? Well, welcome to the club. You cheated your brother, and what did you expect from your uncle? Laban, oh, you got to love this. This guy's got to answer for everything. He says, Laban said, "Oh, we don't do this in our country to give the younger before the firstborn." 7 years he's lived there and nobody told him that? This is just an excuse. "Hey," he says, "complete the week with this one. We'll give you the other in return for another 7 years." Locked in. So anyway, Jacob did so, completed the week with Leah, and Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. Now that's all pretty nice, but here's the guy stuck with two wives. How about any of you fellows here feel like you could, I mean, some people get married more than once, but usually not at the same time, right? And as far as you ladies, you have enough trouble, I'm sure, getting your husband's attention when the Jays are playing without having somebody else to compete with to get that attention, right? If he ignores you, just think of how he's going to be like a stone if there's two of you in the house. So this isn't a great life. But as we said, what goes around comes around. And we're going to talk before we go to the third example of Jacob getting cheated, or cheating, pardon me. We're going to talk a bit about how marriage went. And there's a good reason why God said that people should only be married one to one, not one to groups. Because this guy, this poor guy, ended up with four women in the house because each of them had a servant, and competing with one another, the servants got involved too. And he had 13 children, 12 sons and a daughter from four different women, all living in the same place at the same time. Now, I have a complicated life, and some of you have had complicated lives too. But it wasn't that complicated. It says that they had all these children, and the women were in kind of a contest to see who would prevail. They played themselves and their servants off against one another for Jacob's attention. Didn't have television in those days, so they had to occupy themselves somehow, I guess. But by and by, they're finished having children. Well, not quite, because Benjamin's born later. But as soon as Rachel had born Joseph, which was her firstborn, after all this contest, Jacob said to Laban, "Let me go away, that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I've served you, that I may go. For you know the service I've given you." But Laban said to him, "If I found favor in your sight, I've learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I'll give it." Kind of sounds pretty magnanimous, eh? Okay, you tell me what you're worth, and I'll give you that. But Laban's not finished with Jacob yet. He said, "What shall I give you?" Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you'll do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So then later on, when you come to check the herds, if I've got anything that's not speckled and spotted, well, you know I stole it from you." And Laban said, "Good, let it be as you have said." Sounds like they got a deal, right? But that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in charge of his sons, and he sent them 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. So Jacob gets all the solid color ones. You know, I don't know if they're white or black, but he gets the solid color ones. And the speckled and spotted that were supposed to be his, they're gone. That's a father-in-law for you. Maybe some of you have had a father-in-law like that. But mine wasn't too bad. But if I wanted a speckled goat, he wouldn't have stood in my way. So here's Jacob's answer for Laban. He says, "Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks and the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks. And so the flocks brought forth striped and speckled and spotted." Sounds good, eh? He even put the sticks out when the strong ones were breeding, because they knew a little bit about genetics then. But now the question comes. This is a long time to get to the point, to the question. But the question comes, what good did all this do? He bargained with his brother for his birthright, to get his brother's birthright. He cheated his father and his brother out of the special blessing. And he used all these sticks to gain his uncle's flocks. Or did he? What did all that mean? What good did it do? In his case, nothing at all. Because God had already determined to bless him, to make a great nation out of him, and to prosper him. He didn't have to do any of that. Life would have been a lot easier, wouldn't it, if he hadn't? And our life is kind of the same. We think of ways, things we have to do to please God, things we have to do to be acceptable to him, things that we are required to do to work the will of God in our lives. And we're wrong. We have to do absolutely nothing. Nothing to please God. The only thing that God desires from us, because he knows we're incapable of all these other things that we've just been talking about, the only thing he desires out of us is a relationship. I love the passage in Acts 17 where it says that God desires that men would seek him, perhaps turn to him, and come to him. That's what he's looking for. That's his will. Jacob had a particular destiny. God had plans for him. He's got plans for you too. And I don't know exactly what they are. I don't suppose that any of you have ever heard a voice telling you what God's plans for you are. But God wants a relationship with each one of us. And until we encounter him and surrender to him, we are loose in the world. Just like Jacob, running around trying to fulfill things in his life and get the best out of life for himself and ruining everything in the bargain. Anyway, Jacob is on his way back home to meet his brother, who, by the way, had practically forgotten all about it, didn't care anymore. He had a life of his own. He was too busy. Well, Jacob's worrying about it, and Esau's too busy living to worry about it. So all his worrying was for nothing, which ours usually is too. But while he's worrying, and sometimes the best encounters we have with God are when we're troubled, but while he's worrying, it says, the same night he arose, he took his two wives, his two female servants, or four wives, we would say, his 11 children, because they didn't have Benjamin yet, or the girl, I can't remember what her name was, Diana, maybe. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day, and they wrestled for a while, and they struggled, and Jacob said, I'll not let you go unless you bless me. This person said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, which means he strives with God. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. I've been spared. Jacob had what was necessary for all of us. He had an encounter with God, a personal encounter. We don't know why it took this form. I don't understand that. But it doesn't matter what form it takes. God is looking for each one of us. And for us, it's a struggle. Maybe you came to know Jesus already when you were very young, and you don't remember much about that. But I was 26, and I remember the battle till I finally said, okay, Lord, I give up. And I was lying in bed, and I said, I give up. I'll do business with you in the morning. And it may have happened right then. I can remember such peace. But in the morning, I got up and got down on my knees and prayed all the right prayers and all that sort of stuff. But it was the most amazing change. Nobody changed the name on my birth certificate or anything. I was a different person, though. And becoming what God had always intended me to be. So what can we learn from Jacob's life? First of all, none of us starts from birth with a relationship with God. All of us run around to varying degrees and do foolish things trying to achieve fulfillment, trying to please God, perhaps, trying to be happy. If I can just have that Dodge Magnum with the big V8 in it. A Magnum, by the way, when I was young, wasn't a station wagon. It was a big two-door hardtop sports car with a 360 V8 engine in it. And it was fantastic. I had one. I wore it out. But when it was new, the tires would spin anywhere. When it was old, you had to really work to get them to spin on pavement. But you still had to be careful on gravel. But 400,000 clicks I put on that thing. But great car. But you're looking, but it didn't provide me with happiness because it wore out, rusted away. That's what Dodges did in those days. Rusted away. It was nice to have. Loved it. Didn't make me happy. Didn't give me joy or satisfaction or fulfillment. And neither did any of the other things I tried. You know, you think to yourself, if I just had that. That's too close to the microphone, I guess. If I just had that, then my life would be fine. But it isn't. You get that, and it isn't fine. And as you go through life, people hang things on you. You know, maybe you're 7 years old and they call you a cheater on the baseball field, and that sticks. Maybe they call you a liar because you told a lie, because who hasn't? You know, anybody here haven't? Of course you have. And it only takes one to make you a liar, so we're all liars. But there's all kinds of things people hang on you, and maybe you start finding ways to ease the pain a little bit. You know, maybe you try drugs or multiple sexual encounters or alcohol or... and then they give you other names. You're a drunk or an addict or, you know, you get all sorts of names hung on you. It's different when you come to Jesus. Jacob got a new name, a new start, a new life. And you and I can have one too. A new name, a new start, a new life. We move from being reckless citizens of the world to children of God when we give ourselves to Jesus. All those hurts we pick up along the way, and as you can see from Jacob's life, he got a lot of them, starting with his name at birth. But you and I pick up a lot too. God doesn't care about those things. They're gone. We don't have to live them down in the presence of Jesus. Jesus just wants us to be with him. That's all he's looking for. And as the struggles we go through to try and, I mean, Jacob did a lot of things to try and fulfill his destiny. The struggles we go through to do that, we don't have to because God does the work. He would have done it for Jacob. He did it for Jacob anyway. All the things that Jacob did didn't really count. All God was looking for, come to me. Struggle with me. Get that settled. And then we can go on from there. So today, if there's something that you're struggling with, something that somebody's hung on you or you've hung on yourself, come and bring it to Jesus. That's all that's necessary. You don't have to work it out. Jesus will help you do that. You don't have to reform yourself to be acceptable to Jesus. He will accept you just the way you are.